Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Today's episode of the Mind Sculptors podcast is sponsored by TCG Player, your source for all your trading card game needs. Use our link in the description the next time you get your cards to help support the show. Today's episode is also made possible by our Patreon subscribers. If you want to support the show directly, head over to patreon.com/themindsculptors and you can become part of the Sculpty family today. Or if you don't want to do any of that, leave a like and comment on YouTube or a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts as an offering to Algorithm Jesus.
I do want to get some like crowd thoughts because I got a comment on our Power Rankings episode that I mostly just want help understanding what this means. And it says low finishes should affect. This is in response to our Power Rankings episode last week. Low finishes should affect a deck's ranking. Everyone just GMs the best decks. Fringe decks can do well when the other players have no idea how you win. I don't know what that means. I feel like it has some idea of what it's trying to say, but like I've read this at least five times, and every time I've read this over the past like hour, because I got this like 45 minutes ago, I have read it and just gone, I do not understand what you're trying to get at with this.
Yeah, it's like the statement itself is not inherently confusing. I'm just like, it feels like it's meant to be a critique of something that we said, but I don't understand what it could possibly
be in reference to.
Yeah.
At least to me, and look, I'll be honest and expose myself a little bit here. I've not seen the Power Rankings video yet, but I will.
Well, it's, you know, if just to spoil it for you, this is first. I put Rog'Sai higher than Ian did.
Whoa.
That's true.
Does that mean, Ian, with your current trend of playing non-meta decks, you'll be on Rog'Sai next? Is that why you rated
Breaking
it low?
Breaking news.
Downplay it so it's acceptable. Ooh, in your wheelhouse.
I'm clipping that one later.
My goal has always been to make it to Instagram shorts. That's where you're going next. Yeah. But it sounds like that statement starts off with one point that, like, if a deck does poorly in a tournament, it should be rated lower. Like, a very small percentage convert, even if one goes on to win, if 90% of those decks does poorly, it
the
shouldn't
two
be ranked
statements
very
apart from the two sentences, if you don't read them together,
exactly,
make plenty of sense. It's the combination of the two that really confuses me,
and just the seamless transition from one to the next. Yeah. There's no connector there. Which kind of makes it not seamless, but it feels like I'm missing something, right? So they're really this is gaslighting you. This comment is gaslighting you into thinking that you're the crazy one.
Have you? They wanted to give you something to think about that you couldn't figure out for like 3 days. Yeah. It's actually an
attack from competitors. So we're so psychically damaged by this one quote that we can't be productive for the rest.
This
of
is actually just playing with power, like a burner account that Ryan made.
Yeah, that's
to
what
like fuck
power
us
really
up.
Needs to do. They need to really come at our numbers here at the Mind Sculptors.
Yeah, I know. We're the ones cutting into their numbers. Oh my goodness. Welcome everybody to the Mind Sculptors podcast. I am, of course, the Callahan is medicated, and my co-host is the Dr. Pooh himself. Hey, Ian, have you taken it upon yourself after getting roasted in our comments? Mm-hmm. Listened to Dr. Worm yet?
I don't know what you're even saying.
We had a Jesus Christ. Ian. There was a whole bit.
We talked about this, right? Yeah.
We had a whole bit, and you don't remember. Jesus Christ. Okay, so I was singing Dr. Worm by They Might Be Giants. Dr. Pooh instead of Dr. Worm.
Yes, and I do. I will remind you that that episode I had, quote, I have an hour between clients and also I haven't slept well in 3 days.
So
I will.
So your job is in between now and Chicago to listen to one. I think it's maybe 2 minutes long song by a 90s band. So that's your homework.
Yep.
Listen, 2 minutes is a really long time to do something that's required of you. Mm-hmm. That makes it so impossible.
That's like an entire game in Atali.
You say that the ADD crew.
Honestly, though. You say that, though, but you did like post a picture on Twitter the other day of like a turn one like board state with Atali, and it was indecipherable.
Yeah, it was my turn one Nas that I ripped off of Wounded Satellite's deck. Yeah, for sure.
Yep. Every time I see you say something or talk about this deck more, and every time I look at the list, because I get messaged from people asking for the list because I've talked about it a lot, is... Every time I look at this list, I'm just like, God damn it, I'm going to have to build this list.
It is like, it's becoming my like new deck Roman Empire, where it's like back when the day where I was used to be like, oh, I don't want to play anything but Winota. And I'm just like, now I've tasted the Dino Turbo. I don't really want to do anything else.
It's that Phyrexian oil, man. It gets under your skin and then it just infects you. Well, you might have heard them already, but two wonderful people are joining us today. These are two people in the community that I think are some of the cream of the crop, some of the best people that are out there right now. And I'm just very glad that we get to have them on this week. And that is from Eminence Gaming. And God, I'm trying to think of everything that you're involved in, Max. You're involved in so much shit. But our good friend Max. Max, how are you doing today?
Rebranded recently to topdeck.gg.
Topdeck.gg. I've been a part of that and judging and working with them since their inception.
Yep.
I do stream for them occasionally every Tuesday night and play CEDH. If people ever want to do something else on Tuesdays, they can laugh at me making misplays because I'm not used to playing online. but yeah, I've been a part of the CEDH community, going to a lot of events, running them, doing all the things.
Fellow Thrasvile enjoyer.
I think if you look at Thrasios Vile on EDH Top 16, I'm like half of the results.
I don't think that's untrue. Also joining us is a dear friend of Seth, one of the premier judges in this format. Am I correct? But you recently just went up a level as a judge.
Actually, I went up two levels. I will never be a level three because I skipped right over it to level four in the new Judge Foundry system. But thank you.
So I am really excited to have you guys on because both of you are part of the group that is developing the multiplayer MTR and IPG, the addendum document that is used for competitive EDH events. And this is something that viewers of the show would know that I have been advocating for a long, long time and have been yelling about into the void for years at this point. So it's really exciting to have you both on. And so I think going into this conversation, I'll start it off like really simple. Is because I get this question a lot in the comments, and so I know that this is going to be inevitably posed, is what is the MTR and IPG anyway?
Max, you want to take this one?
Sure. So the MTR and IPG, it's Magic Tournament Rules and Infraction Procedure Guide. Basically gives us a standardized guideline of what a Magic tournament should look like across the board so that a player anywhere in the world who's playing Magic and going to a tournament should know exactly what to expect and should be held to the same rules. And it just, it creates a general idea so that players are never blindsided by rules and can prepare themselves accordingly.
Yeah.
I want to say that if you go and you play a board game at a friend's house or any game wherever, you know the rules for it, right? Like, that's a thing that you should do before you start playing. This is a thing that I tell all of my local players, and I'm telling you who's listening right now the same thing. Read these documents, whether you're playing in a standard league or the next regional championship or a CDH tournament, whatever it is, mm-hmm. read the MTR and the IPG. You don't have to memorize it. You don't have to know it to any great extent, but reading it, knowing the rules that you are held to when you go to a tournament is important, especially because even if you don't know what you're doing, you're still held to some tournament shortcuts that these rules mm-hmm. present. You're still held to, you know, not fucking up. Can I curse on this podcast?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
This is the home for cursing on the internet, as I like to
wonderful.
Say.
That's what the H in Mind Sculptor stands right. for.
Read
those documents. It'll help you. It'll up your percentage points. You'll know what you're doing more, and you'll be able to call out your opponents when they do something wrong more often. And it usually mm-hmm. ends up returning the game to a proper state.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things about it, too, that I think we kind of take this for granted, but it's something that I think is really important is if you've ever played at a Friday Night Magic or if you've ever played in any sort of constructed tournament for Standard, Modern, Pioneer, Legacy, whatever, they are all operating off of the same document, off of the MTR and the IPG. They are two different documents, but they are functionally a combined set of rules. And mm-hmm. what it does is, you know that no matter if you're playing Legacy or if you're playing Pioneer or if you're playing Modern or Standard or what have you, you know the experience you're getting yourself into, mm-hmm. and you know the expectations that are being laid out in front of you.
Yep.
And I think that is really important to establish because, like, you know, like, even if you haven't read it, a lot of people you still kind of know more of the MTR and the IPG than you actually do, because if you've ever been to these, you have experienced what it is. You know the time limits. You know how turns work. You know how, how Mulligan procedure works, how you're not supposed to don't offer opponents things for wins, things like that. Yeah. Like, you know those rules going in.
And also it helps, like, not having to have the conversation that I've had with several TOs over the past years of the question to being like, we've solved this, like, issue 3 years ago. Why are we still dealing with this stuff? Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. Like, I've had that conversation too many times as a CEDH grinder, right? Like, it is just so frequent that there are just a bunch of issues, especially now that larger TOs are starting to adapt, into CEDH, right? And larger groups are starting to, like, put these things on. It will help to have a universal system that says, like, this is how we've been doing this. It's been working. And also it appropriately adapts to the nature of the format, which is multiplayer, right?
And I think one thing that I also think is a relevant question to ask you guys, too, is who is the governing body? Who kind of comes up and runs the just the MTR and IPG, the, like, straight up, like, the tournament rules as they stand?
So that comes from Wizards. Wizards has the 1v1 MTR. It has a mm-hmm. little bit of multiplayer stuff in there, but it's not really built for that.
If I recall, it's two-headed, like, giant. Yeah, I was gonna say it's like two-headed giant, right?
Which yeah. by it's still a head-to-head, but it's technically multiplayer by
right.
certain definitions.
Bring back two-headed giant Pro Tours.
Do not bring back two-headed giant.
That sounds like hell on every judge in existence just moaned in agony.
I think there was one Pro Tour and one GP that was two-headed giant, and thankfully they were well before my days. So Wizards has a committee. One of the members of the commander rules committee is on that group, which is Toby Elliott. He's the one who is kind of the most public figure for this because he puts out the updates. And so he writes, you know, we changed this and here's why. That's an important role. But yeah, they have a group and these documents get edited. Like I said, there are policy updates. They change every once in a while. Sometimes those changes are minor, like changing a little bit of the wording for something like deck problems so that it fits more situations. And sometimes the changes are pretty major, like turning drawing extra cards, which was an old penalty where if you drew an extra card, you got a game loss, into what we currently have of hidden card error, where if you do something involving a card who you may do something wrong that can't be solved by information that both players have, right? So like you draw an extra card or you look at the top seven cards with collected company instead of the top six, something like that. That's hidden card error. And that doesn't come with a game loss anymore, which is great. We have a new tool to fix that.
It's very funny because when I started my judge training and when I like first started as a judge, it was right when that rule changed. So I very vividly remember this rule because I was training in tournaments where both of those rules were applicable. And it was a hard thing to like wrap my brain around initially. But I vividly remember this time.
Pin that, because that feeling I think we'll get back to later in the show. If I have any sort of future sight, it is that we'll come back to this feeling of inconsistency. But yeah, Wizards runs it. They change it when they deem it necessary, and that's why they're official, because they come from the head. They come from the source.
And it's also, so I think this is another thing that's interesting too, is because it comes from Wizards, there's a degree of accessibility, would you say, Max, where it's just like easier to get a hold of?
Yeah, there's plenty of resources. I think most often I reference the annotated MTR and IPG, which is just a project where they break it down into like digestible like statements and give plenty of examples and everything. But like, it's very accessible to the general public and always like very easy to thumb through, searchable and all that.
Yeah, if you're running a sanctioned tournament, you're doing it through WPN, and part of your kit that the WPN provides you are links to these documents. You have to run things the way that these documents say that you will in order for your tournament to be sanctioned. Those are guidelines at the bottom of the MTR. Like your rounds have to be 50 minutes. That's the rule. You have to have a judge who is separate from a player in order to sanction an event, and your TO can't be playing in the event either. Stuff like that that keep the integrity of the tournament good, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. So then let's transition then to, we move over and now we're talking about the MTRA and the IPGA, which for kind of layman's terms is the multiplayer MTR and IPG, I think is probably the easiest way of, discussing it. And so when we compare these things, what is this that you guys are working on, for like the MTR and IPG?
So essentially we want a visible and easily adaptable way for people to run multiplayer competitive events that take the existing rules that we have for 60 card and bring them to where they make sense in the more complicated board states that we have in CDH and the different social dynamics that we have. I have been working on this pre-Monarch documents because I was running competitive EDH at my local game store before these existed. Mm-hmm. And just the feeling of having like hundreds of dollars of prize on the line and looking at somebody and being like, well, this is very awkward because this situation doesn't work really well here, and giving people like these I've done some interesting fixes across the years to make things work just without the guidance, and the last 2 years have really shown that there is a huge demand for these types of events, and I think as that demand grows and grows, it needs that consistency in order to be sustained. Otherwise, people are just going to get frustrated by learning their local game shop rules and thinking that those rules apply everywhere, and then being hit in the face with these either harsher or softer penalties and procedures, right. Depending on what store or region they're in and what they're where they're playing.
Yeah, like the difference between having an entire tournament match shafted because someone got a game lost and gets booted out of the game versus like the turn skip system that's been adapted is like it's that alone like illustrates how much these changes are really needed, right?
Yeah. Well, and Max, you hinted at something interesting there, and this is something I'd like to kind of point dig at a little bit more. Is you mentioned the Monarch kind of time working on this stuff. So what is some of the history behind the multiplayer MTR? Because this has been around for a while.
Yeah. As far as the Monarch documents, I was not involved in those. Seth worked on those a little bit. Mm-hmm. I know he contributed to them before that even became a thing. Like before I knew Monarch was like a company that was running CDH. I stumbled on them by accident looking for solutions for my local game store. Mm-hmm. And spoke to Libby a bunch, and that was like right before they put the document out, which obviously it wasn't perfect, but I really appreciate all the groundwork and everything that they did to start.
It did a lot of really essential stuff.
Right. It started breaking the mold and showing that it was okay to change these things to adapt to this format. And really, it definitely paved the way for what we're doing today.
Yeah.
But even like before that, I'm in my local game store, like gluing things together to make things work. Mm-hmm. The first time I told a table, hey, you shuffled your hand into your library. Well, show your deck to the table and let them pick all of your cards. the faces of like shock on everybody's like, we get to give this person six basic lands. Mm-hmm. Incredible. we've gone through a lot of changes for sure. To get where we are. And CDH has definitely improved because of it. And that's for sure.
Yeah. Seth, I know, and Max just kind of talked about this, was that you did help contribute to the Monarch document. What's the kind of the growth pattern and the differences between kind of the experiences? Because I know like for somebody like me, I played a lot under that rule system because that was kind of the predominant prevailing document in the community for a while, because there really wasn't anything else. What are kind of the big shifts and changes from that to kind of where we are now?
So honestly, not a ton as far as I've seen it. There are some things from the Monarch days that didn't make a ton of sense, like the time limit in the round didn't change very much, and their unflexibility with tardiness was a little bit tricky. And then they didn't have some guidance on some of the questions that a lot of players have, like what happens if I get probe you? What can I tell? Can I show the table these cards? Or like, mm-hmm. if I have cards in my hand, can I show it to my neighbor? And the Monarch documents didn't have a ton of guidance, or they were not aligned with some philosophies that players had. So, but a lot of what we have is built on that. And this is a constant process of iteration. So like players, we run tournaments and we say, okay, this is working. And so we build into policy, and and you get documents from that. And then you run tournaments with that policy and you say, okay, we need to tweak this and we'll refine this part and hone that edge. And it's like, you're shaping this unhewn stone into a nice streamlined form that works for the players, for the TOs, for the judges, and for the format, because all of those things need to be balanced in order for policy to be good. You want to make sure that you're keeping, and we really believe this, that player experience, feasibility of implementation, and mm-hmm. philosophical consistency, I think are our three big pillars for these documents. And in order for them to be successful, I firmly believe that all of those need to be, as I said before, balanced.
I think that's like a really important highlight there, is like those three pillars, right? Like you want your players to be having a good time. You want the tournament organizers to be able to put these things on, right? Because if not, then who's going to help the players have a good time, right? And then that last part is super key too, like consistency, right? So if at the end of the day you go, players should be able to exercise X, Y, or Z condition, right? Like then the next thing that comes out, you shouldn't be like, yeah, but players have a little too much of that X, Y, and Z, right? Like, that's not, you know, people start to not have faith in your document if things like that come out. So I think those are really interesting is the pillars and probably the best ways to be like lining yourself up for success, keeping that that idea in mind of like every step builds towards the same goal.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting, Seth, you and I had talked about this a little bit yesterday, and I think it's a very poignant thing where in Commander, there's a lot of emphasis on the spirit of the format, right? And the philosophy behind the format and how it came to be. And so I think that it would be, you know, important to maybe talk about the philosophy behind this document and like so those pillars more and what they are and how they shape the decision making y'all make.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Sure. There are a bunch of key things, and philosophy is tricky because we aren't as organized. I am not as organized as the RC is. I do not have the philosophy of this document written out in here's key one, here's key two, here's key three. So like those three pillars is pretty much what I've got right now for these are the things that we're working towards. For me personally, I want to make sure that tournaments remain open to everyone and safe for everyone. And we're all in agreement with that. And we've made changes to our documents to or to the policy in order to facilitate that a little bit more. We want to make sure that they that players are incentivized to play as much as possible. This is what I was talking about with you, Ian, and I'm in full agreement with that. If we shape things in a way that it makes sense to not actually play Magic, then that's not good. we want to make sure that tournament integrity is upheld. And that's just kind of a baseline for any policy document. You know, can't let players be bribing each other or gaining advantage from penalties because that all of that upsets tournament integrity. Players who infract, like the person, if I mess up, I shouldn't be able to gain an advantage from that mistake. Just to get there on that. Those are kind of the off the top of my head, the things that I'm keeping in mind every time I'm trying to come up with a solution to a problem or, and honestly, most of the time that I'm writing policy, it's not about coming up with a solution to a problem. It's about codifying something that we're already doing in a way that makes sense. I think in a Twitter response, but I see this document that we've written less as here's a totally new thing and more as a here's how we've been doing it already. Let's take that desire path that tournament organizers, players, and judges have been walking on and pave it. Mm-hmm. Make it so that when another judge comes up with, hey, this situation happened, what do I do? There's an answer, because that's the consistency that we're looking for. And that's going back to that drawing extra cards, hidden card error thing. If you're going between tournament to tournament as a judge or as a player, it's really confusing to be like, okay, at that one, this happened, but at this one, that's going to happen. Yep. And that makes the format harder to break into as a new player. It makes it harder to judge because you have to remember all of these different things that different organizers are doing. Makes it less friendly.
Yeah. Sorry. I was just going to say, I literally had judges over the past year who've been like, yes, in another tournament that I recently was at with you, it would work this way, which, you know, I'm not going to make a comment while I'm in the building about which one I agree with more. But currently at the tournament that we are at, it works this way. Sorry.
You don't have to quote me without saying my name, Ian. It's okay.
No, no. It's actually not just
you're
you.
You're actually not the only one that said that to us.
Yes, I'm
assuming we're also calling out Baldy with this because that's absolutely something he would have said.
I will not put
I will neither confirm nor deny.
Yeah,
I mean, that is one of the things that I think, and this is something we've talked about on the show. I think people who remember the episode we talked about, SCG Cincinnati, was one of my primary complaints is the inconsistency between events. And I think that is, and I think one of the things that Top Deck does that is very good is they create that consistency, but it's still like, you know, not everywhere, right? Because not everybody's working through that same system. Not everybody's using their, you know, in their circuit. Not everybody's doing that. And so that's part of why I've advocated so hard for this. And so with that, you know, Max, when we look at this, one big part of consistency, right, is widespread adoption. Because otherwise, you know, if nobody's using the document, then, you know, we can talk about it all day. But if nobody uses it, then it doesn't matter. So what is like the biggest hurdle and what is kind of the road path to getting widespread adoption for the addendum?
Visibility, for sure. And there are a number of people in the community that don't believe this is a format still. And that's like, they're able to believe that, that's fine. But,
They are just factually incorrect.
Yeah, like people want this, and like even like people want to play Magic. They're going to play Magic how they want to. And we're providing a consistency for that. So I think the biggest hurdle is visibility and acceptance of some people who are slightly old world thinkers who are not accepting of new policies and ideas and concepts within Magic and Magic rules.
Back in my day, we didn't have planeswalkers. were the planeswalker.
Exactly. So it's like, we need to, I think education is probably one of the most necessary things, is that we need to be able to reach organizers and people who are running these events and give them this information and show them that this is like a way to be consistent with everything else that's around you, not just like throwing your ideas at a wall of what this should be and letting it stick or not. I think it would be more successful overall for everybody to be on the same page and pick these up. But
I always find it funny when people like point back to, and this happens straight up in like regular ass politics nowadays too, right? Like people to like point to the Constitution, right? But you point to this original intent for Commander, right? And it's like, well, yeah, and you know, all these things apply to the game, but at the same time, like when the original intent of these things was being created, you couldn't sit down at a table and have Saruman battle Megatron, right? But like that is that is not the Commander we are playing nowadays, and there's Fortnite in your card game, and so like we have to realize that it is currently the year 2024, and we have to be able to adapt, right?
Listen,
and I agree, and I've definitely noticed that, like, once again, a lot of those old figureheads, you know, we won't call out specific organizers and things like that because I don't think that's very productive, but there has been a lot of backlash from that, in the sense of like this very condescending attitude towards multiplayer Magic in general, right? And you know, I even notice it as a creator who goes to 60 card events and things like that, where people will definitely make comments like that about like,
oh, they talk down to us all the time, right?
Yeah, like, we're playing a real format over here and stuff like that, right? And so while I don't think that is a mass majority of people, we have to realize that, you know, at a certain point, Wizards started focusing on Commander as the main format that they pay attention to, right? So, like, if there is a competitive adaptation of that, this was inevitable, and it's here, and there are dozens of tournaments. We went from once a quarter having a tournament to I literally have 3 weeks between a tournament, and I'm like, oh my god, this is the biggest gap I've taken in so long. That's insane. Like, that transition has happened over the past calendar year, and we've got to recognize that's We're in a very different space now. I, as a tournament grinder, could technically go to a tournament every weekend.
Absolutely. Yeah, and could be online every weekend.
Yeah.
Like
on that, it's not just talking about widespread adoption. We're not just talking about adoption by these big TOs who are running, you know, maybe big 5K plus sized events, but also adoption by the small stores who are running their weekly CDH events and have a judge who is making great choices, but is also might be reinventing the wheel, and we want to help reduce that that labor too. So not just spreading it through TOs, but also through judges. And we have, we're also in the judge world in a weird place, because with judges, with the old judge program ending pre-pandemic and Judge Academy taking over, judges were splintered already because they were in two different places. And then now with Judge Academy, kind of no longer having Wizard sponsorship and other organizations taking its place, there's also more splintering.
It's very funny because speaking of that because I am an L1 and I've been looking at doing my L2 for like a while, and then Judge Academy stopped being the main one and stopped getting accredited, and I was just like, I have no fucking idea how I would do my L2 now. So I'm just like, all right, whatever. So
that's a different podcast, and I'm happy to talk
about that. That is a different podcast, but it's very funny you said that, because I've been thinking about that for like weeks, actually, because I've been like, I think this is something that I've kind of talked a lot about, and I kind of want to address more, because I have done a lot of local, I think, Max, you and I share this, where I... predominant amount of, you know, a lot of people know me for doing like the MLC stuff, but a lot of my CEDH organization comes from organizing at the store level. A lot of what I have done was spending, you know, years developing a CEDH league at my local game store in Lincoln. And, you know, there, all of this stuff that we're seeing now, I went through those iterations when I was running that league, right? You know, you go through all of these things because you are kind of feeling it out, because there isn't anything. And one of the things that I always get is, okay, well, how does this impact the locals? You know, how does this impact me? I don't play in tournaments. I just play at my locals. Like, how does this, like, this is something that I think is also very important, is like, I feel like these rules can have the ability to be useful even outside of CEDH, to be helpful even at a casual level when you're trying to organize your Friday night Commander nights. You know what I mean?
Even looking at like an event like Commander Sealed, right? Like, no one is under the impression that that event is a CEDH event, right? That is a extremely casual event, right? But they have had multiple instances, I know, like, as I've gone to them, where they've been like, yeah, I don't really know how we even interpret this in multiplayer. And then like another judge will come and be like, between that same judge staff, they will not have the same idea what to do. Right. And then like
on that, you asked before, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Max, but you asked before what the MTR and the IPG are. The IPG is the infraction procedure. We talked about that. The IPG applies to both regular and competitive events. The first part of the IPG is the jar, and that's only for judging at regular. And then the second part is for competitive. But the MTR is just everything. And it's like what you're saying, there's this super basic stuff in there, and things like, what time limit do we use for an event, or and then there's also stuff that's in the MTR that overlaps with the comprehensive rules that aren't addressed anywhere. Like, if you're doing two-headed giant commander, how much commander damage, or how much infect's actually covered, or what life totals do you start at? These are questions that I don't believe the documents provide answers to. The infect one they do, but commander damage and life totals they don't. And I had to, when doing this at a MagicCon at Vegas in 2022, we were running this event and no one had an answer for this. And I had to message somebody on the rules committee to be like, hey, I need as official an answer as possible for this question.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's like actually insane. That is like a solution you had to go for, because that is not a fun fact, a solution that everyone has access to.
The only thing I wanted to add to that is, like, as much as this documentation can help for like the MTR side of it, I wouldn't advocate for applying a lot of the fixes for regular, because these are intended for competitive. These aren't intended to be used at regular REL, and like the jar for something that's run at regular, like Commander Sealed. You can still apply those fixes. They're a little weirder, and you might like need to play with them just a touch if you're doing something like that. But
that's super fair.
Philosophically, I think it's better to apply those in a casual setting, like at your weeklies or at a sealed event or something like that. Like, I don't want you to go turn skipping a player in locals because their deck was marked because they used the sleeves from last week. I think it's much more like this is for competitive events. If you're running a competitive weekly every week that's at Comp Rel and you have a judge enforcing this, mm-hmm. fantastic. I think it's great practice for larger events, but make no mistake that this is not meant for every single CEDH event. It's just meant for the ones held at a competitive structure.
Right.
Yeah. I guess my point is more to the same in the way that like at Friday Night Magic with standard FNM, right? You're not going to lose a game because of marked sleeve or something like that. Right. Like, or unless it's like maybe that's a little bit more to the discretion of your like LGS, right. Depending on how bad it is. But, and I think similarly, that's kind of how I would view these in that environment. Mostly the existence of them being there is to give some structure and some guidance to LGSs and to the people who are the judges at LGSs to have any idea of, okay, here's this really weird board state. How do I unfuck this? So
yeah,
that's that's more of how I view it. But I also do agree with you, Max, that by and large,
at regular, there's two things. It's either you're educating the player or you're mm-hmm. removing them from the venue. That's it. It's if you're not teaching them what they did wrong and helping them fix it for the next time, you're kicking them out because you think it's malicious and they're bad for your environment. So, and like, I don't think there's a space for in between in regular, really.
Yeah.
Maybe that's there's like, corner cases, but yeah. It's like, fix
that's,
it.
That's fascinating. I've never ever thought about it like that, but I guess that is 100%. There's really that 0 to 100 exclamation.
No, that's literally how I was taught too. Like that is, so I guess, the kind of the last thing before, you know, as we kind of get towards the end of this, what are like the biggest misconceptions people have about, you know, whether it's tournament CEDH or the MTRA and all of that stuff? Because, you know, you guys deal with this a lot. You answer a lot of questions. What are some of the biggest things that people misconceive that you would like to kind of address?
I think, sorry, I'll let you go in a second. This is short, I think. As far as people misconstruing this format, I think they don't realize what we test for, because it's not the same as 60 card. At 60 card, you're pitting pure skill against pure skill, and like there's some element of bluffing, but that's not necessarily the same here. We're literally testing for your interpersonal skills along with playing Magic, mm-hmm. because you have to be able to read a table. You have to be able to work with or work against your opponents effectively, and it just adds that extra layer that I think our document starts to encompass. Then that's the one of the main differences for our documentation is because we have to make these changes because we're testing for a different skill set, not just because we want an easy fix for whatever this game state is. It's because like the objects that we're looking to get you to do in this game don't function the same as they are in 60 card. It's mm-hmm. more than just a different format of the same game. It's really an evolution of its own section of Magic.
It's almost its own game to some extent. You know what I mean?
It's a very different rule set. Things interact differently. But you could say that about Two-Headed Giant also, because that has a lot of really, really weird rulings and effects. But
A lot of the Two-Headed Giant stuff comes from it being best of one, which we have to deal with as well. That's another thing that makes us different. To add on to that before I say the other thing that I was going to say, that is another thing in the philosophy that we keep in mind, is that when you enter a CDH tournament or just an EDH tournament of some kind that's at competitive, to be showing up with a CDH deck, and that's another discussion of what letter you put in front of EDH to classify all these things as. But when you show up to this tournament, you're not showing up to prove that you're the best at drawing and playing cards. That is not your goal. And if that is your goal, then you might be at the wrong place. And I'm sorry to tell you that. The goal, I mean, sure, you could also have a goal of like having fun, but a goal to win a CDH tournament, you're trying to show that you are the best at drawing and playing cards, but also at manipulating your opponents to mm-hmm. do what you want and to fight against each other. And that's the social aspect. That's the political aspect. And that is an inherent part of the format. And that is something that we have to keep in mind when we're writing these documents. And that's why
I mean,
it can't
I
be the same as the 1v1 document.
I know people roll their eyes every time I bring it up, but there's a reason I draw the comparison to Survivor, because Survivor is very much in that same way, where you are actively working with and against your fellow competitors, like at any given moment. And so it is, while obviously it's not an easy one-to-one comparison, it shares a lot of the same social elements. And I think when it's a lot easier to compare it to that than like tennis, right? Like 60 card games feel a lot more like, you know, the Williams sisters going at it than it does, you know, the best season of Survivor you've ever seen. And like, I feel like those are they're both competitive, but they're testing different things. And I think that is, you know, like in Survivor, you have to be able to do the challenges. You have to be relatively physically fit to do that show well and be able to be competitive there. But you also have to be able to know how to talk to your opponents, know how to maneuver those social situations. And I think that's the thing that sets EDH apart from the rest of Magic, is that social element.
I have three things. The first is, when you mentioned the Williams sisters, we all saw Ian's like screen light up because he was Googling Williams sisters, right?
Get out of here.
Maybe you guys haven't seen this. I'm going to throw the red flag. I'm going to do the progressive replay on this one. Anybody else watch sports here?
I did see that event on Sunday.
Okay.
I'm a white man from Massachusetts. Of course, I know what tennis is.
As the only one here wearing a sports jersey. Yeah, that's probably accurate. Yeah. That's the first thing. The second thing is one of the sources that I drew, and I think some of us also drew inspiration from, were other games that have multiplayer aspects. So like Catan, I've judged Catan tournaments, and they have built in order to make their multiplayer codified to some extent, they have a code of conduct built into their rules. And so they say, if you're not following this code of conduct because you're interacting with players poorly, you're out. That's it. Sorry, you're done. And so having elements of that into our policy, I think, is important. That's the second thing.
Don't be an asshole clause.
Yeah. The Will Wheaton DBAD. Yeah.
I would really love it if we could put the don't be just very blatantly, just don't be an asshole. That would be a great addition, honestly.
It's in there. We just say it as a little like minor. Yeah.
And that's the thing about Magic, is that there is, as far as I know, there are other games with very comprehensive rules and policy, but there is no game that has, one, built it from scratch like Magic has, and two, is as comprehensive as we are. And you can't be comprehensive when it comes to policy, when it comes to just interaction of people, because there's an infinite number of ways that people can interact. And there's close to an infinite number of ways that cards can interact. And I say that as a math major with a full knowledge of what infinity is. But you could still build almost all of them into a comprehensive set of rules. So policy documents exist to create buckets for you to fit things into where they most likely fit. Or the way I think about it is, you have a policy and it's going down one of those old like gold sorting river things, you know, when you were a kid and you like shuck out like silt.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Like, we're going back to 1849.
Back out in San Fran.
Exactly. You're all as old as I am, 300 years old, right?
Yeah.
But
there for the California gold rush for sure.
you take this infraction. Somebody did something wrong. The game state is fucked up. And you move it down the line. And does it fit into this bucket? No. Okay, we go down the line. Does it fit into this bucket? No. And then there's, you know, a catch-all at the end of GRV. And does it fit into that? Well, not great, but we can work with it.
And so then a judge with one tooth gives their ruling.
Yeah, that we're all paid in gold. That's how we make it work. Look, hey, to any TOs out there watching this, if you want to pay me in gold next time, I'm...
gold anything, yeah,
gold bricks, we'll take it.
But while I get to be on a pedestal, or you know what, I'm gonna take out I'm gonna be on this platform, I'm gonna take out a soapbox so that I'm on an even higher platform just for a second, and I'm gonna say REL does not mean anything without a thing before it. If you say that a tournament is at REL, you're saying nothing, and you're saying it's at rules enforcement level. While I can be on a soapbox, REL, you need competitive or regular or professional, but we're not there yet. for CDH at least. You need something before that. All right. And that's the soapbox moment. I'll put it away for now.
This was me yelling about Underworld Breach a few weeks ago.
I like the idea that someone comes up and he's like, yeah, what type of rules are we at? We're using rules. And it's like, no, cool. Which ones, though? No, it's rules.
Yeah, it's rules. That's the we're making it up as we go rules.
Yeah.
As
the Barbie thing. It's like he works at Beach.
Yep. That's exactly what I hear whenever somebody says that. And I try to be as prescriptivist as little as possible. But it just that's that pet peeve of like, all right, cool.
Let's
rules. We're using magic rules. You can't play as many lands as you want this time.
Zeusa go burr.
I can put any card from my hand face down into my inkwell, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's how it works.
talking
about cards for mana.
Look, if Worldknit were legal. No, not Worldknit. Sovereign's Realm.
We buy cards from the middle, right? Like we're using Ascension rules to play magic.
Talk to me about other ways of playing magic. I have ideas. The misconception that I actually want to bring up real brief, if we're on that topic still, is that you can judge CDH the same way you can judge a 1v1 tournament. And that's a tough one because it's largely the same. You're still enforcing the same comprehensive rules, but there's not two people at the pod. At a table, there are four people. Right. And so just as a judge, investigating from all four people is important, making sure that all four people get heard, regular judge customer service stuff. But also knowing that when it's 1v1, something that benefits one player is going to not benefit the other player. But when it's a four person pod, like what you were talking about before, Max, giving somebody all or six basic lands if they commit a particular type of error. Sure, it's going to make them not able to play the game for at least a little while, but it's also going to affect the rest of the pod in a pretty detrimental way. Or like what Eden was saying before, with if somebody's game lost, then that's, you know, net good for the other players. That's not necessarily true. And I say that, you know, as a Tivit player, like I want there to be four people in the pod at all times. And I try to do what I can to politic. Yeah, thank you. Yes. Esper forever. I want a politic so that life totals stay relatively even, like I imagine Teemer Pirates players do as well, because that's an important part of the deck. And so in CDH,
straight up concede at sorcery speed when I was playing Tivit at a tournament, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like that times even hand and everything, right? Like,
yeah. Well, and that's also something that you have to build your deck to and like have play patterns and understandings in place to be able to work around to some extent too, because we can't. We don't build policy based on any specific cards or commanders. That's just not something that we have that we it makes sense to do. But the knowledge that this four person thing is imbalanced by one player being eliminated or being shackled in some way so that they can't participate is important to keep in mind, and is I think a misconception that a lot of judges and players both have that necessarily. Giving an infraction balances things when it doesn't. And in another way, when we think about customer service, something that's makes it easier for one player, like a customer service thing for one player, might be bad customer service for the other three players. And that's an important thing to keep in mind too. And that's a different balance than good customer service for one player is bad for one other player. That's different than good for one, bad for three. Just all of those, you know, kind of common sense distinctions from when you go from two people playing to four.
Yeah. Seth, I don't know about you, but I'm feeling like I might need a judge.
Well, I'm so glad you brought that up, because something that I think players don't do enough is call for one. I love it when a player shouts judge as loud as they can and keeps their hand in the air until the judge gets there. It's the first step. And then I get to help them. And whether that happens at the table in front of everyone or away from the table, where nobody can hear what you're saying except for me and, you know, whoever else is behind me, but importantly, not the players at the table. Those are both excellent ways to fix a problem, whatever that problem is. And if you're worried about fallout from that problem or pushback or politics, talk to me away from the table. We can handle it in a way that doesn't blow back on you. That's really important. And which please call us. We'll solve it.
And I've had like a lot of people like over the past few months, like try and be like critical of things that have happened in like stream games and stuff like that. And I'm like, there's a reason I like go out of my way to call a judge. Right. And like in a lot of those situations, it's like because there is zero ambiguity when like a judge is involved, or if especially if those things need to be appealed. Right. If they're like major moments that happen and like on the streams and stuff like that, like these moments are so important to have things at 100%. Right. And so I'll definitely like a lot of the pods also are super understanding. They're like, hey, guys, look, let's just call a judge, get it nice and cleared up. And then that way there's zero questions. And everyone's like, yeah, I do like the idea of there being zero questions. Right. Like no one wants to end a game with a giant asterisk because they're like, well, we did a shortcut, but it really effed me later on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially in that scenario where like you it's a really basic fix. Oh, you just have to take this card in the graveyard and put it on the bottom of their deck or something. And then like six turns later, they play a Grenzo, not the one that. You know, the black red Grenzo,
the good Grenzo.
Sure.
The good Grenzo.
And now that card on the bottom of their deck like really matters, and you're like, oh shit, now we fucked the game up. And that's like a pretty innocuous example. It's really hard to fix a problem when it's like, you know, you broke your arm and you didn't go to a doctor, so then it healed, but it didn't heal like quite right, and now your arm is like a lightning bolt. That's cool, but it's much harder to fix that. You probably have to
break it. You're the Harry Potter of CEDH.
Exactly. Don't be the Harry Potter of CEDH because that's transphobic. That's the moral of this story.
Adversely, hire a judge for your events if you're running things for significant prizes.
Yep.
We spend way too much of our time learning these rules so that we can provide for Magic players. Like we do provide a valuable service. Stops a lot of feel bads from people trying to fix things themselves or a tournament organizer who might not be on the same up of the rules and how they work.
Yep.
Googling things is not always the answer.
and kind of to Ian's point with like calling judges, one of the things that I do a lot of, and Seth can attest to this when I'm at events, is there'll be a thing where I'm just like, I'm like 90% sure I know how this works, but I'm like gonna double check. And I just like, hey, judge, and Seth or Baldy or whoever walks over. And I'm just like, hey, if I do or if this is doing X, you know, does that do this or does it do this or how does it work exactly? Because I think I know how it works, but I just wanted to double check. Like that is one of the things where if you have any uncertainty about how something works, just call a judge. Obviously, we can't give you like specific like strategic information, but if you go, if I play X, will it do X, right? Or will it do Y? Like those are questions that are a lot easier to answer than, you know, can I do this, you know, sort of thing. Like it's one of those things, but ask clarifying questions.
That is one of my three pro tips when you're calling a judge. Asking clarifying questions and making sure that the judge is giving you the answer that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. Usually it's helpful to say, what I'm trying to do is this. Does it work if I do this and this? That's the first thing. The second pro tip is if you have to ask a question away from the table that is related to something that's happening at the table, maybe you want to say, hey, this player is playing slowly or it's been really aggressive, but you don't want to say that in front of all the whole table. Say, you know, I'm 90%, I know how this works, but I'm going to call a judge just to check and then talk to them away from the table. And you're just asking them about a card in your hand, but it's this much bigger thing. And then it also gives the judge an excuse to come back to the table with you and be like, okay, now I'm going to watch and make sure that this happens. And in case any of these other players have questions, and that's a common thing. That's pro tip number two. And I forgot what pro tip number three is. I'll get back to it.
Don't be transphobic. That's pro tip.
Pro tip number three. And that's general life pro tip.
Well, I mean, that's why it is in the list, right?
In a very timely fashion, I remembered what pro tip number three is, and it's to look at the clock when you call a judge. Like as soon as that game stops, you raise your hand to call for a judge, look at the clock, write down the time if you need to, because the time that it takes for a judge to get to your table and give the ruling, like you can always get like a minute or two, but especially if it takes a while, I'm particularly bad at this because I have time blindness. I can't see clocks. That's how time blindness works, right?
Yes, that's definitely not ADHD.
It's all of that. But I sometimes forget to look at the clock. And so I'll give an amount of time that I think is reasonable plus like a minute or two because I know that I'm estimating poorly, but sometimes I'm estimating really poorly and it's helpful to have, we actually called you at this time. Oh, sure. Here's your extra time. And I want to make sure it's important that you get the same amount of time. Mm-hmm. That goes for any format of anything limited to CDH.
So if Seth specifically comes to your table, definitely note the time is what I've heard.
And then secret pro tip number four is that you can always appeal. If the ruling is
a head judge.
Yeah.
Unless it's a head judge, but when I'm the head judge and you can appeal without appealing, which is to say, like, you can say, is there any way you could confirm that? Or, is there any way I could get it like a second? You could get a second opinion on that. I just want to really make sure it's true. And I personally am happy to honor that because I think it's important for the customer service that that is a deviation. That is not something that you get afforded at every event. It is in the MTR, go read that, that if the head judge, that every player is entitled to the head judge's ruling. So if the head judge is the one who comes to your table and gives you that ruling, that's the one that you're getting. You can't appeal that. But I like to provide the customer service. If there's another judge who I can talk to in a reasonable time frame, then I'll go and say, just to make sure I'm correct, let me get a second opinion. Here's this thing. Here's how I'm ruling.
Make sure you ask for that nicely. If you're asking a head judge for an appeal, snapping back at the head judge is just going to get you a firm, nope, deal with it.
And sometimes
generally speaking, be respectful and reasonable with judges, just generally.
And I don't think you even need to maybe restrict that to judges.
That's very true.
Just maybe be nice to people.
Back to don't be a douchebag. Like,
insert Bowling for Soup song, don't be a dick here.
I think, like, in my experience playing this game, that if you're watching this channel, presumably you play too, that CDH specifically.
If you don't play CEDH or Magic and you're watching this channel, I have like a lot of questions.
Remember to like and subscribe. Like,
right? Our sultry voices are something that just want to be listened to on repeat. So don't judge people who just watch this for the ASMR.
I really do discount the ASMR value in the content. Mm-hmm. You're right.
I think Cal and I are definitely known for having relaxing and not shrieky laughs. So that's good.
No, the extra followers,
we have a very calming energy here on the Mind Sculptors.
The extra viewers on this video particularly are following me and Max around. They're just the ones who stalk us on YouTube and like whatever videos we pop up on.
Seth is the hottest judge in Magic, and that's
true.
That is judge canon, to be fair. That is.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate you guys coming on. It's honestly like Seth can confirm this because he and I have done this multiple times. I could talk about this shit for hours because like these are the type of things, and I have talked about this for hours on and off camera. But I believe in the work you guys are doing. I'm very glad that somebody is doing this stuff. I would love to see WotC get behind what you are doing so that we can get mass acceptance of this, just because it, ultimately that's the easy answer, right? Is WotC comes up and goes, OK, we're going to adopt this. And then that fixes the roadblock hurdle, right, of the adoption thing that I was saying. And so that is something that I think I'm going to continue to push for, because I think the more that these things become uniform, it doesn't just benefit CEDH, it benefits everybody. And that is the type of thing I like to see. I mean, it benefits, not that Oathbreaker gets played competitively, but if you wanted to, it benefits Oathbreaker, benefits any multiplayer format that we have these rules in place. So I really appreciate what you guys are doing. Any final thoughts from you guys before you're going? Where can people find you? How can they support what you're doing?
Yeah, you can reach both of us through the MTRA-IPGA on Twitter or X, whatever you choose to call it. I won't judge you. That's fine. That's not me. You can find me personally on Twitter at TrickboundMTG or on Discord at Trickbound, or on the Top Deck YouTube every Tuesday night. You can come hang out with me, heckle me and my friends as we play CEDH. usually you can make fun of Billy. Billy Cork is really, he's really easy to make fun of sometimes, and then he just wins the game, so he puts it back in our face. But yeah, that's everywhere I am. Definitely questions about the MTG or the documents would definitely go through our official X account. We'd be happy to respond there. And if you're a judge who's interested in contributing or putting your thoughts forward, you're welcome to reach out to us there. As we don't consider ourselves the final authority on this by far. And I think the more people that we have accepting and working with us, just giving feedback and general ideas, the more conclusive this will be to being accepted by everybody. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm Seth, and you, Cal is going to definitely put in YouTube, like a link to my Twitter up here, maybe, mm-hmm. or like over there.
It's going to be in there. The links.
Oh, okay. Down there.
I don't put anything on the screen because that would require me to do any
much
work on the back end.
All right, yeah, so there'll be a link to my Twitter.
Your voice is going
to
sound go great, down there, Seth. Yeah. Wonderful. Anything you want on the screen.
Yeah.
No, it's not going to happen.
All right. Then I'll
so many times.
Like, a little crown or something.
Yeah. I've been like, oh yeah, Cal's going to insert a picture of my cats right here. And then it'll just be dead air for 5 seconds and then we move on.
Good bit. I like that. And I'll bring OBS next time to give myself the crown.
There you go.
So I'm at Seth Arara on most socials, except for some of them where I combine my first and last name, and it's Sater, SaerTahr. That maybe will also be in the description. That's how you can find me on Discord. I am super happy to answer any questions. I will, especially about how to become a judge. Cal will talk after this. We'll work on codifying our philosophy to make it easier to understand and engage with. And before we go, I wanted to shout out all of the people who I and we have taken inspiration from. And that's the Monarch documents that I mentioned before. That's the Portuguese magic judges who have another version of this that's really organized through through GitHub. And definitely recommend checking that out too for other ideas on how to make this work. For SCG, because they have a ton of experience, and we've taken inspiration from how their tournaments are run as well. Our missed trigger policy is pretty much directly from how SCG did it, and I think it makes a lot more sense than what we were working with before. From Catan, from Lorcana, all these other games that from Fab even, which all have had a lot of thought and work put into policy, and I want them to all. You know, saying it publicly for the first time that this is all of those places have been sources for inspiration. And then you can find me at any event. I'll be at Chicago. I'll be at, I won't be at Philly or Atlanta, but I'll be at PAX East. I'll be. Nice.
Are you judging in Chicago or are you just at Chicago?
I'll be an area manager. So you can find me at the White Stage in the afternoon till the show closes.
You know anything about Seth, you will not find him. He'll be running around putting out fires.
Oh, true.
You will not so see true. Seth until after the event, actually.
maybe I'll see Seth if my events are in the white section, but that's that's true. If you're playing in the CDH event in Chicago, you'll definitely be able to find me at that event. Me.
Cool. I'm playing one of those.
Yeah, I think I'm playing Saturday.
Nice. But,
Please come and ask us questions. Like I want this to be as open an avenue of communication as possible. Yeah. I want people to feel comfortable with saying, hey, this isn't working, or I expect this problem to happen. And I want to make it easier for those questions to be answered and for people to find answers to those questions if they have them.
Yeah.
I'll just get a playmat for the weekend. Ask me about the multiplayer addendum.
That's not a bad idea.
Well, thank you guys so much. If you are going to be at MagicCon in Chicago, Ian and I will both be there. We are going to be doing I believe we're calling it the Scry Sculpty Cinematic Universe Greet Meet and Greet at noon out in the creator area. You can come see me, Ian, Lua, Tori, the whole
noon
gang
on
will
which
be
day,
there.
Cal? Noon on which day?
What?
You said at noon. Which
oh,
day?
Did I not say Saturday? I meant to say Saturday. Noon at Saturday. We're going to be for 2 hours. We'll be there. And if you see that Mind Sculptors thing back there, I'm going to have a lot of those prints available to that Ian and I can sign and hand out to people. So if you want one of those.
I didn't even know that.
Well, they were at the last event, so they're going to be at the next event. I'm trying to think. At Minneapolis, were you officially my co-host of Minneapolis, or have we not taken that jump into the great beyond together yet?
No, I don't think we did. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You were just part of the Mind Sculptor cinematic universe.
I was a Mind Sculptor, not one of the two heads of the Mind Sculptor.
Yeah. It's funny because the Mind Sculptors and the Scry Babies, it's kind of like Marvel and Sony. You know, we're obviously the Sony. We make the funny stuff. We make all the stuff people laugh at and don't take seriously. And
Scry Babies makes the money. Is that what you're going
exactly
for?
No, that is very accurate. But yeah, thank you guys so much for coming. Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you for having
Ian,
us.
Ian, you do some coaching stuff. Am I correct?
Yeah. Hey, everybody. I do that as a job. You should come get some advice if you heard mentioned. I am the CEDH Tournament Grinder. what's the short version of the pitch?
What is it? The most wins on unique decks over the past 2 years, I think, is the most condensed version of that I can come up with.
I think that is honestly like I have more wins with different decks than any other player, period. I'm pretty sure ever. So I think that's a pretty good lock in for my thing. And yeah,
it's
so
still wordy. We still got to workshop that name.
It's wordy, but that's probably the most condensed. So yeah, come get coaching with me. There's a bunch of links that Cal is generous enough to leave in the links down below. You can also find me on my other channel, Comedian MTG. Mostly top 16 breakdowns of tournaments, all stuff like that. So, yay.
I will also pitch that Ian is the only coach who has reached out to, at least to me, for accurate and timely judge advice. True. So if you want to have a line to one of the creators of the document, go to Ian.
You can take Ian as your middleman.
Right, instead of directly contacting you can go through me.
Yeah.
Pay him a lot of money in order to ask me the question. It's actually a very reasonable amount of money for the services that he offers, especially at the level. I have a lot of great things to say about you.
Thanks, buddy.
I will have more great things to say about you after you listen to the song Dr. Worm. I wanted to bring it full circle.
You know, the more you bring it up, the less likely I am to listen
to
this.
Well, the good news is that in 2 weeks, we're probably going to be in a car together. So you might not have an option. So
repeat.
With that being said, thank you all for tuning in to the Mind Sculptors. I'm Cal.
I'm Ian.
And we'll see you next week.